Hey friend, Graham Baldwin here with the Speaker Lab. Hey, wouldn't it be nice if someone gave you the exact process to find and book more speaking gigs in 2024? That'd be nice, right? Well, I'll tell you what, we're just going to do that for you. We've created a new 18-page guide based on Dan Irvin's process that helped him actually book over $100,000 in speaking gigs in the past year. Now, Dan is one of our team members here. He's a very successful speaker and also one of our coaches. And so you're going to learn how to get started prospecting, master discovery calls, proposal emails, and so much more. All you got to do is go to thespeakerlab.com/steps. Again, that's plural. thespeakerlab.com/steps. We're going to send you that PDF guide right to your inbox. Again, that is thespeakerlab.com/steps. That's it. That's all you got to do. Go there. Hey, thanks for listening. We appreciate it. You're awesome.
But we know we represent less than 10% of the speaking business that happens in America.
Hey, what's up, friend? Graham Baldwin here. Welcome back to the Speaker Lab podcast. Hey, we got a great episode for you today. For this week, I sat down with my buddy Brandon Edmondson, who is the VP of Sales, one of the top agents over at Premier Speakers Bureau, one of the largest speakers bureaus in the industry. He is literally on the front lines of the speaking industry day after day, so he's going to bring some really great insights and knowledge to this conversation. So today, we're going to chat about what's currently happening in the speaking industry, things he's seeing, trends he's noticing here in 2024, how to adjust your fees to better position yourself in the market, and why you do or don't need to get connected with a bureau. If you're thinking about a speaking career or you're in the process of building one, this episode is going to help give you a lot of context around growth opportunities, when and how to involve a bureau, how to create your own speaking career like a pro. This episode is a really great one. It's going to be one of my favorites. So let's get right into it. Here's my conversation about all things speaking with Brandon Edmondson. Enjoy. Hey, what's up, friends? Grant Baldwin here. Welcome back to the Speaker Lab podcast. So good to have you here with us today. Super excited for today's guest. We're going to be chatting with a friend of the pod, Mr. Brandon Edmondson from Premier Speakers Bureaus. He's one of the top agents over there. We've had Brandon, multiple other agents, Sean Hanks, the president and CEO over there on as well. And so anytime we need to go to like a bureau or just kind of see behind the curtain of what they are seeing in the industry, these are some of the guys that we go to. Brandon's been on, I don't know, 3 or 4 times at this point. So definitely go back, check out the other episodes that he has done. Brandon, always good to chat with you, my friend. Welcome back.
Likewise. Thanks for having me back. Something's going right, obviously. So
something's working.
Keep having me back.
I know. We will. We will. and I think one of the things, you know, one of the reasons we wanted to have you back was you just joined us for our team retreat. So we are, the Speaker Lab's a completely virtual company. We've got about 40, 45 team members or so, all scattered all over the country. And so we usually once a year or so, we'll get everyone together in person. We happen to do it in Nashville, where you and I are both from. And we've done it in a variety of different places, just happened to do Nashville a couple months ago. You and Sean came and we just did kind of some Q&A talking about the industry, things that you're seeing. And so part of what you had shared there, things that we want to share, you know, kind of with a collective audience. But we're recording this Q1 2024. So why don't we pull back a little bit here and just say, like, all right, big picture, like, what are you seeing in the speaking industry at this point? What's working? What's not? What are just kind of your overall trends or impressions that you have right now?
For sure. Yeah, I mean, as we look to 2024, right, it's crazy that we're there. If you kind of back it from COVID, right, we have the pre and post COVID, all of our projections after 2022, we knew 2022 was just going to be a phenomenal year because of the demand was so built up, right? We have to meet, if we're biannual, we're definitely meeting in 2022. That was our best year ever. It was most bureaus' best year ever. And our projections for 2023 were very, I think, conservative. Right? We're like, okay, listen, let's not get crazy. Let's not overspend. Like 2022 was great. We'll see how it goes in 2023. We are a part of a bureau that was just fortunate enough, and not all of our bureau partners, but a lot of them in the industry also had their best years in 2023, right? So 2024, kind of that same mindset. Okay, let's be conservative. But our Q1 was up about 6% from 2023, which was our best year ever as a bureau in 30 years. So we see the industry very strong. Now, there's a combination of things as to why that is. I think speaker fees are on the rise. And so, you know, we look at gross bookings, right? What is our gross number? From that perspective, is kind of how we track a lot of things. So we're seeing more bookings and we're seeing increased speaker fees. So with all of those things combined, that's creating an opportunity, I think, for really strong speaking business, whether you're a bureau or, you know, just an independent speaker, there's business to be had for sure.
So you mentioned like, okay, going into 2022, we expected big numbers. 2023, we're skeptical. 2024, we're skeptical. Do you feel like, do you feel like that you're just kind of waiting for the other shoe to drop? Or do you feel like, I don't know, man, like, because again, we've both been in the industry for a while and different perspectives of it. But for the most part, it seems like for the past decade plus, have you seen just year over year growth?
Yes, we have. We absolutely have. Obviously, with the one COVID year, we all basically were just trying to break even. But if you extrapolate that out, we have seen pretty consistent growth. There are always going to be things, recessions, 9/11s, those type of global events can impact a year. But if you're trending over the course of 5 to 20, we've been in business 30 years. You know, we've seen a pretty steady increase. Not that the shoe's going to drop. But I do think as agents, we are very cautious of speakers raising their fee too much, right? Like it is, this demand is still there. In-person is so important. And I think companies are sprinkling in virtual. It's a very small percentage of what we do, but it's also creating opportunity because they're going to have their in-person events, right? Like that's happening. But every once in a while, they're like, you know what, let's still do this virtual event. So that's still another event that we do get to book that we just never would have booked in years past. So with all of that, speaker, they're definitely raising their fees. And I think that is going to settle a little bit. And I do think, unfortunately, some speakers may have, you know, increased a little too quick. And they're going to have to say, ooh, man, you know, 2024 summer and fall isn't quite what I expected. Is it because I increased my fee a little too much? And that's something to just keep in mind.
You touched on virtual there. So it's kind of like, I've always said prior to COVID, like virtual just wasn't really a thing. It wasn't something that speakers really took that seriously. Event planners didn't take that seriously. It existed, but it just kind of in the back corner. COVID happens, it becomes the only game in town. And then for a minute there, it's kind of been where as in-person has come back, it's not necessarily come back completely in replacement of, but kind of in addition to virtual. So in many ways, it's created this additional source of events that didn't previously exist. You know, so 5 years ago, pre-COVID, the idea of doing, hey, we're going to do an in-person and then we're going to do a couple of virtuals is like, I don't even know what you're saying. Like, that's not a thing. But now that seems like it's been much more common. But, you know, 4 years or 4 years from COVID at this point that we're recording, like, what are you seeing? Like, where does virtual fit into the landscape?
Yeah. We do 2,000-ish events a year here at Premier. And, only, you know, less than 1% of those are virtual right now. So that gives you just where we're at. But I say that as a standalone. The best sales tool that I think we utilize virtual is with our speakers, exclusive and non-exclusive. Someone comes to us, say, hey, you know, can we get a discount on that fee? Our sales response typically is no, we can't discount the fee, but how can we create more value? What if for $20K, as opposed to just a 60-minute keynote, let's add two virtual check-ins throughout the rest of the year, right? Like, do you have a budget for that? Well, yeah, like we could move some money around. So that's how we try to implement it the most, is let's not negotiate on fee, but let's add a couple virtuals. The speaker, you know, they can still do that from their room. They don't have to travel. And that is how we try to utilize it. And then the other bucket, I think you're very, very massive companies. You know, if you've got a 5,000 person company, 10,000 person company, they're just utilizing virtual more, right? It just does cost so much. They're still doing an in-person event for sure. But probably the top five biggest companies that I have do like a quarterly virtual event, right? And so it's not what I'm focused on, but I know every quarter I'm just sending them some options for, hey, here's, you know, here's DEI, here's sales, whatever they're trying to do. And that's a little bit of a piece that we can tap into.
What are you hearing on the speaker side of it? Are speakers, you know, for a minute, again, because it was the only option, it was just kind of the wild, wild west of, you know, 2020, even a little bit into 2021, all the speakers are kind of figuring out, like, hey, this isn't too bad, you know, like, I don't have to get anywhere. I don't have to put on pants. This is awesome. But there's also the side of, like, you know, you lose the connection with the audience. Virtual is not nearly the same as what in-person is. So what are you hearing from the speaker side is, like, kind of their perception of, do they want to keep doing virtual? Or are they like, hey, man, I don't want to book any virtual. I would much rather. It's just a better experience. I can command higher fees. You know, what's the stance that you're seeing on that?
I mean, it's a mixed bag, but speakers aren't discounting as much for virtual anymore. It, you know, with COVID, it was like 50% or less discount. So we're, you know, and we kind of encourage it too, to push away as an agent, right? We make money off commissions and the speaker gets it. But they're really, you know, if they're a $30,000 speaker, they're really saying, okay, let's do like 20K for virtual. So they're not discounting as much to probably try to push for that in person. There is the connection. We do see spin just so much more higher on in-person events, right? Like the spin just doesn't happen. There's not a good mechanism, I think, on virtual. And it's just not as good of an experience to pull the string and say, ooh, I really want to bring this person in for my event. And so they do want, if they can, to get that full fee to go and travel and then use virtual, I think, as a supplement to potentially, you know, just add on.
Cool. Let's go back for a second for the kind of the industry as a whole here. Mm-hmm. A couple questions. One would be like, all right, it seems like, again, year over year, you take out some of the anomalies and some of the Black Swan events, and there's been significant growth in the speaking industry and continues to be. This is one of the things I love about this industry is it's got a very long track record. You know, people gathering mm-hmm. to hear from another human being has been a mm-hmm. thing that's existed, you know, well before any of us were alive, and it's not going away. So regardless of technology or robotics or AI or whatever, like people are still going to want that in-person, you know, community type of feel. But what is it, do you think, that has made the pie continue to grow? Is it just more events? Is it more speakers? Is it speakers that are aging out? And like, where is that? Like, where is that? Like, where's that growth from the pie coming from?
I think it's more speakers. I do. I think the barrier of entry with technology, just with being able to build a website so easily, like those types of things used to be really hard and you have to invest so much and you maybe even had to have a book. But I do think with tech and just everything that is in an individual's hand right now, like you can be a speaker. And you know, we do a lot of research. We're even building some products here at Premier on the tech side. You know, all of the bureaus that are under the IASB, International Association of Speakers Bureaus, right? We know there's about 100 of us on some level. We are a part of this community, but we know we represent less than 10% of the speaking business that happens in America, right?
Like, okay, say that again. Yes. So you're not talking about just Premier. You're talking about IASB.
IASB. It is our organization. We all get together, you know, your big bureaus. And I would say there's 20 or less of us, but we represent, like, we're a pretty big gateway, right? Yep. If you get on that stage, Kyle Sheely he's a friend of the pod, probably one of our exclusives. He got on that stage, crushed it. He's going to speak 70 to 80 times this year. And that happens year after year. So this is the gatekeeper of agents. We know we probably represent less than 10% of the billion-dollar industry of the speaking pie, right? So that means Coca-Cola, all these companies on the outside of that pie, they're just connecting direct with speakers. So the pie is huge. And we're at Premier now that we're trying, how do we get into that pie, right, a little bit more? So Coca-Cola has to come to Premier or an agent and say, hey, Brandon, this is my event. Can you make some suggestions? And of course, we're there to facilitate that. But because there's so many speakers, you can Google Coca-Cola Event Planner, can just go to, you know, X speaker's website. And if they're non-exclusive, if they don't have a relationship, which I tend to believe there's thousands of those, probably a lot of speakers listening here, like the barrier of entry is lower. And speakers can develop relationships with massive organizations and do consulting and do virtual. And there's plenty of opportunities to go around.
And so for a speaker who may be listening to this, who is newer and going like, I've always been intrigued by speaking, but to your point, it does feel like there's just so many speakers out there. And it feels like, you know, you float through anybody's social media profiles. Everybody has, you know, speaker in their bio. And so it just feels like the world doesn't possibly need another speaker. And so why me? And like, I'm interested in this world and I'm interested in getting in this space, but it just, you know, is it saturated? Mm-hmm. Is it overcrowded? You know, maybe that perception is reality. But at the same time, it feels like, yeah, but there's also thousands and thousands of events that are happening on a daily basis. Mm-hmm. And doesn't matter what, how successful any given speaker is, like they can't do all of them. You know, it's a very space time continuum constrained, you know, type of profession. So like, what would you say to that speaker who may be watching, listening, going like, there can't possibly be a need for more speakers?
No, the market is saturated. There are a lot, but it doesn't mean that a speaker can't rise and potentially find some relationships without a bureau or without management and still get some good direct business. Like that's definitely a possibility. If it is a good message, if it is something that people want, if you are good at that, speakers will always be cropping up because, as you said, it's an inventory issue. Our busiest speakers are going to speak 80 to 100 times, and that is just not sustainable. Yeah. You can't really have a family. You cannot have a life. That is a great thing to put on your resume. I spoke 100 times this year, but that's not sustainable. You're never going to be able to do that. And so there's other slots that have to fill. And so many event planners are asking me, who's new? What's something that maybe I haven't seen before? Who's the new speaker that's going to be 50K next year that I can pay 15K for this year? And so event planners always want that. They always want something new and something fresh. And there is a reality, certainly within, I think, the pie of the bureaus. You do get to the point where if you've almost spoken for every single client at every single agent and not all the way, but like you do get the point where you've spoken so many times for all these agents. Now with new content, you can go speak again in a couple of years, right? But there's always opportunity, I think, for new, fresh ideas and new, fresh speakers.
You also mentioned that, you know, kind of speaking fees tend to be on the rise right now. And so you kind of think about like just laws of supply and demand, that if there's way more speakers than there are events, that you would think that would actually drive fees down. But you're kind of saying the opposite. Is that, you know, why do you think that is?
I think it's because, well, I think some of it is just inflationary. Like it's just costing more to do things, right? We're seeing it with travel. And so the speakers say, man, like if I'm going to go, if I am going to leave my family, it is personally expensive and the market seems hot. So I am going to rise. The demand is through the roof. But I think you could fly a little too close to the sun with that for sure. Yeah. And be like, oh crap. Like I haven't had any bookings in like 4 or 5 months. Why is that? Well, it could be a fee issue, right? And, you know, we've had to have that conversation with a few speakers. And, you know, it's always easier to go to the market and increase fee than it is to decrease fee. So just do that real slow. Like that's that, you know, we try to advise our speakers of that. Some are like, I don't care. And it works. And sometimes like, ooh, but you can always raise it 5K at a time, 2K at a time, and you don't have to double that fee overnight, right? Because going to the markets and actually, I will take half of what I quoted you last week is kind of a bad look. So just do that incrementally and do it very strategically.
Is there any other just general advice while we're on the topic of just raising fees for speakers? Because there are always going to be speakers who are going like, and not just speakers, but like all speakers who are like, I always want to know, how do I raise my fee? And so what are some things that you have seen, especially like, and again, let's kind of classify here. You work with a lot of speakers who are, you know, 15, 20, 25 and up and much, much higher. Mm-hmm. So there's going to be some speakers that are in the celebrity camp, you know, the Peyton Mannings, the Deion Sanders, who are just nobody's coming because of what they necessarily have to say. It's because like, oh, that's Deion Sanders up on stage. And so that's going to put butts in seats, you know? And so they, you know, there's a popularity thing of just in that moment. But for Tom Smith, you know, Joe Schmo speaker, who's like a good quality speaker, they're a $5,000-$10,000 speaker. And they're trying to figure out, how do I go from 5,000 to 7,500 to 10,000? Like, what are the, are there checkpoints or their criteria or things that like you feel like they need to have in place in order for a speaker to raise their fee?
I wouldn't say like external factors other than fee. I just look at fee and a sense of demand. If you have gotten 10 to 15 secured dates at that fee and you feel like it is going in the right direction, then I think you could realistically look at a fee increase. The mistake we see so often is I'm 10K. Someone comes through and you kind of have a good agent or you have a good conversation and they pay you 20. I'm a $20,000 speaker because you got one deal.
Yeah.
That is a big miscue, right? Because the market may not bear that. I think it's looking over the average to say, okay, I have booked 10 to 15 dates pretty consistently at this fee. Should I look at an increase? I think that is realistic. And it still might be no, because you like the amount of volume, you like how much you're working. And so I think if those things are happening where you've gotten it multiple times and you feel like the market is doing it, and you are comfortable with the idea that you might lose out on a couple because of a fee increase, you are going to bump yourself up. If you go from 10 to 15, there's going to some say, I'm maxed at 10. And so you're no longer in that and you've increased your fee to 15, right? So you have to also be comfortable with the idea that you will price yourself out of some budgets, and you have to be okay with that because of the volume that you have.
Yeah, it's interesting that there's the objective data of like how consistent are you getting booked at X rate, and then the supply and demand. But there's also the subjective part of just kind of like, how do I feel like business is going? Do I feel like I've got tailwinds? Do I feel like I've got some momentum here? Do I feel like, all right, I've talked to other speakers who are maybe that next tier above me, and kind of like, where, how's business look for them? What are the events that they're speaking at? Oh, wow, I'm being booked for all those same events, but at a lower fee. So there is kind of like the, you got to take both the objective and subjective and try to make a decision out of it.
For sure. For sure. And what's home like? Are you a single person that wants to go out and just keep killing it? I mean, keep your fee the same. Like, if you're happy and you're financially doing it, if you're like, man, I got a couple kids at home, it's a little bit harder for me to travel, you know, I wouldn't mind if I was speaking a little bit less. Well, then that's a perfect time, I think, to look at minimal increases. But yeah, there are unwritten rules. But I mean, I think being a part of a community, like you said, Grant, like this, what you guys do is, you know, I know you're at times connecting other speakers and they're talking to your team. It's like, get a little bit of counsel on that. Like, what did you do a couple of years ago? And I think one of the best things is just to compare apples to apples with other speakers, for sure.
Big time. There's also, unfortunately, like so much of speaking fees is, it comes down to like pride and ego of being able to say like, oh, I'm a X speaker. I'm a 10,000. I'm a 15. I'm a 20,000. Like you said, maybe like they got paid once for that. And actually that $20,000 fee was, I did a keynote and three breakouts and two follow-up sessions and a consulting. And it's like, well, you know, again, it's not completely apples to apples, but so much of speakers can just get wrapped up in the ego of it and can kind of look past, unfortunately, like just no, like treat this as a business and you're running a business and think about the, you know, the laws of supply and demand there. Any advice that you'd have for speakers in terms of like trying to set their ego aside on whether it's fees or just like their speaking business in general?
I mean, it's just data. Like, we always are looking at data. You know, when speakers come to us, you know, we have worked with thousands of speakers over the years, and you know, you'll get a speaker every once in a while that will just say, you know, it feels like it's really slowed down, and I feel like, you know, you're only booking me when I send you a lead. It's like, all right, well, what does the data say? And we're like, actually, you're going to make more money this year. 70% of the bookings came from stuff we brought. You know, so that's just not true, right? And so to me, it's just data. Like, look over the course of a year. Do your best to keep track year over year. What are you netting? Did I net more? Did I net less? How many times did I speak? Am I working a little harder than smarter? Like those types of things. I think it's just really important. And then, you know, okay, I feel like I'm a 20K speaker. Well, are you? Like the last, like I said, 10 to 15 dates that you book, what's the average? Like, is that true? And are you actually that? At one or two deals, you know, doesn't mean that the market would say for 60 minutes, like that is what my going rate should be. And so to me, it's just whatever metrics you can continue to look at to say, what does the data show me? That's how you can make, you know, the best decision on where to go.
Yeah. And you know, in this case, in this example, you know, as a bureau, you guys are tracking all of that. But for most speakers who are not working with a bureau, like you got to track your own numbers. You got to track your own data and be able to objectively look at, you know, how are things going and what are the consistent speaking fees that I'm getting? And, you know, what am I having to provide in order to get those fees? And so being able to look at that is super important. Okay. I want to talk about something else here. You mentioned again, the pie itself for the speaking industry is growing. Are there certain industries and kind of sectors within that that tend to be growing more so than others? And I would caution by saying, I think it's always dangerous when a speaker's like, hey, what's the biggest industry? What's the hottest industry? How do I speak on that topic? It's like, no, don't chase that hot thing. Cause you know, if you don't know anything about it, or you're not even interested in it, like you're not going to make it anyway. And so, as a precursor, like what are some maybe industries or sectors that you're seeing is like, hey, there's a lot of demand in this spot right now.
Yeah. I handle tech here at Premier, corporate tech, and it is just one of the best sectors, right? Like Silicon Valley did great during COVID and they, you know, profits are as good as ever. So yeah, like they're still riding that wave. That will always be a sector that's really strong. And then any finance for the most part, like your banks, your investment companies, your real estate lending, like those types of financial companies, those are the ones that typically you'll find big deals where, hey, we want to book you 30 times over the course of 2 years, right? Corporate finance is typically that market where you're going to find a lot of those. And then maybe the service industry as well, even though COVID was horrific for them, their bounce back has been pretty good because people are out, people are spending, they're going to hotels. So that service industry, like your, Ritz-Carlton, right? Yeah. Like they're a great example of like, man, if you get in with one of those, they could book you 30, 40 times over the course of a couple of years at all their branches. So, you know, your Fortune 50, 500, they're always going to be spending. As far as topics go, most of those topics don't really change. We see year over year, every year for 30 years, the most search terms on Premier site, motivational, inspirational, like that's just the reality. And then some of the fads, I mean, I realize the sensitivity of two white guys on this podcast talking about it, but I'm getting so much more, so less of the DEI stuff. We're just not getting that from corporate America right now. So speakers of diversity, like there's a huge place for you and every single proposal, man, like we as agents know that that is what corporate America is absolutely looking for. We are diversifying those proposals for sure. But the topic is very rarely a DEI topic, right? Mm-hmm. We want people of color. We want more women on our stages. Huge opportunity, like I think we've never seen before, but that is a topic that I would kind of shy away from as like leading with. If, like I'm a DEI speaker, I would lean away from that topic because we just don't get asked for it as much anymore, right? So
interesting. Any other topics that you see that are trending up or down? You know, DEI, you mentioned kind of AI, slowing down perhaps.
AI is one, like it was blockchain, maybe five AI right now. How do we deal with AI? How do we, if you have expertise in that, in any specific market, healthcare AI, I would be doubling down on that. Finance AI, international, whatever that looks like. If you have a AI expertise, like that is going to be something that we're going to be dealing with often. Ethics around AI, we get asked that really almost every day. Right now. And then other topics that are kind of in decline. I mean, I can't think of that much. I mean, it's, you know, after COVID, it was certainly we want it to be touchy feely. We just want inspiration. We are back to much more nuts and bolts. Like it has to be funny. It has to be energetic, entertaining, inspirational, but there has to be some really strong takeaways. What are we doing with this on Monday? We're really back to that as opposed to just high level inspiration.
Yeah, that makes sense. We have talked a lot on the podcast with you, with Sean, with some of your colleagues in the bureau space about like how bureaus work. So we don't have to necessarily rehash that. But again, like bureaus are, for better or worse, they're kind of, for a lot of speakers, they're kind of this coveted thing of like, if I could just get in with the bureau, then like my life is set. And you and I both understand, like, it just doesn't work like that. And if you can't get booked on your own, a bureau is not going to all of a sudden be able to pour gas on a fire that doesn't exist. But if there is a fire going, they can absolutely do a great job with that. So I thought it'd be interesting to maybe take kind of a different angle here, rather than saying like, hey, here's all the things that are great about a bureau. Like, can you make the case for us, like, why should speakers not be interested in a bureau? Like, why do speakers not need a bureau?
Yeah. If you are a speaker that really doesn't have an intention to go exclusive with the bureau.
And maybe explain the difference between that.
Yeah, right. So at Premier, we handle two different buckets, exclusive speakers and non-exclusive. And exclusive is all roads lead to Premier for our exclusive. We have in the faith, political, corporate, and EDU space, we probably have around 70 speakers where all roads lead to us. If you go to that speaker's website, it basically comes to me. I facilitate it to one of our 9 agents to sell. The reason being is those speakers have got to the place where they're too busy to field that. They don't have time. They don't want to. They hate the negotiation. They want to write books, speak, be with their family, and they're interested in other projects, right? Because the volume has got to that point. Or we sign them so early, they're like, I'm horrible at that. And the non-exclusive is just speakers that we book a handful of times throughout the year. And I think the potential disadvantage with the bureau is you might have this idea, like if I'm on a bureau's website and they booked me once, that could really turn into something big. And that's really not the reality. Most of the time with the non-exclusives, a customer that I've been working with for years will maybe even bring up a speaker's name that I've never worked with. And they get it. They're like, oh, can you go track down so-and-so speaker, and I'll go through the website. I'll do the whole thing for them. What's the fee? What are we talking? Are you available? And I do all that, book you once, handle the contract, but you're not really in my pitch Rolodex very often.
Yeah.
And so I think some speakers get into the mindset of like, oh man, if they book me once, it's going to be hot, but it's really not in that level. We're not out. We're not doing a lot of outbound for you. That can build over time. You know, we've referenced a speaker by the name of Josh Linkner, right? He is a non-exclusive speaker. He works with 7 or 8 bureaus. He's one of those free agents, and he probably gets booked 5 to 10 times by every single bureau throughout the year because we, you know, we've built that rapport. But I think early on, the downfall can just be, you know, we're not pitching you as much as you think you might be, because there are thousands of speakers out there, right?
Yeah. And you kind of mentioned like, and then differentiating the non-exclusive from the exclusive, like how many, just a guesstimate, like how many speakers total do you think are on like the Premier website? I would assume over 1,000.
Oh, thousands. Yeah. Thousands.
So again, just for context, like, you know, thousands, plural. Mm-hmm. And of that, there's 70, right. You know, a 2-digit number there that are exclusive to Premier. And so again, from a agent standpoint, you know, Brandon, from your perspective, like the reality is like you can't really get to know thousands of speakers, let alone hundreds of speakers, and let alone 70. Like just in your world, if you yourself are booking a couple hundred events per year for speakers, there's probably a couple of dozen speakers that you know really, really well. And that's just like, that's true for any type of sales role of, hey, here's an inventory of 1,000 different products we offer. Like you're probably, I mean, think about like 80-20 rule and probably more like 90-10. Like now that they're like, here's 10% of the speakers that I work with that are booking 90% of the gigs. Was that fair to say?
Yeah. And to your point, another downfall potentially would just be that agent, if I have you on the website and I have your bio and your video, I still really have no idea how to pitch you. Like no idea. So if someone comes to me, Coca-Cola, and they say, and I'll be very honest with them, hey, what about, you know, X speaker? I'm like, you know, I don't know. Like we can set up a call. Yeah. I know they're on the site, but I will be honest. I've never booked him. I've never seen them personally. And that might just, you might be gone. I'm like, okay, well, who do you like? You know, like, so we can't really, you know, pitch you appropriately as best as you would in the short term. Like I'm at this point with my exclusives, I know exactly what they're going to do. But yeah, with those non-exclusives, there's just too many for us to do you justice on how you would pitch yourself. It's just impossible.
It's also important to note that, you know, from a sales perspective, like you're in the relationship business, and a lot of these clients that you've kind of alluded to are clients that come back to you year after year after year, event after event after event. Right. And so, you know, your reputation's on the line. And if they don't like working with you, or you pitch them a bad speaker who shows up and sucks or is difficult or whatever, they're going to go down the road to another bureau, or they're going to go to, you know, some non-exclusive speaker and kind of cut you out of the deal. And so your reputation of just going like, okay, I'm making a recommendation and I need you to work with me year after year after year. So I have a choice. Here's, you know, thousands of speakers that I don't really know, or here's, you know, a dozen speakers that I know like the back of my hand, and I will stake my reputation and my name on these speakers will absolutely crush it for you. Like that's, you know, that's a really important distinction to make there.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, there are times where we say, hey, we'll book this speaker for you because that's who your CEO wants or whatever. But just know my hands are kind of, you know, we need to be watching that. We'll do it. We'll take the commission. Like, we'll do it. But yeah, we do have to preface it sometimes with that because we just don't have that knowledge to be able to pitch you appropriately.
You wash your hands of the situation.
I have to. I mean, kind of.
Yeah.
All right. Let's wrap up with this. You know, again, you get hit up, I assume, daily, weekly from speakers who are like, hey, how do I get in with a bureau? I want to be in with you. And again, the reality is mm-hmm. like 99% of them just don't need a bureau. So what's some of the advice that you give an up and coming speaker, a newer speaker, they're booking some mm-hmm. gigs. And they're not yeah. necessarily, again, the reality is they'll probably never need a bureau, but they want to be a professional speaker. They want to do it at a high level. What are some of the most common things that pieces of advice that you give or just things that you see that like, hey, if you want to play at a higher level, these are the things that you got to have in place. Like, what are some things that come to mind for you?
You know, a very clear site with a very clear message, a few different, you know, videos of you doing what you do. A sizzle reel is good. We are seeing a move towards, hey, can I get like a little bit longer than the sizzle reel? The sizzle reel, you know, we always use the example of the sizzle reel is like the movie trailer. A lot of trailers are great. A lot of movies are terrible. So even though the trailer thought it was going to, so that still applies. Like you yeah. could have a great edited video, but you're not that great of a speaker for 60 minutes. So, you know, buyers have been burned, you know, agents have been burned on that too. And so we're wanting to see a little bit more. Hey, just go ahead and send me 60 minutes or 45, whatever you got, just so I can see it. Like, how good are you all the way through? And then if you have a relationship and it feels natural, the best way to, you know, get in with an agent on some level is definitely just to send a lead. And it's an easy thing to say, hey, I've almost closed this thing. It's pretty much a done deal. Could you, me and the, you know, client get on a call? I'll loop you in. I'll pay you a commission that we could negotiate. But that's the best way, I think, to get an agent's attention. And it shows us so many things that, well, there is interest for you. It does help me understand how to pitch you, how you pitch yourself. That goes well. I get that good feedback. And that's a great way to start to build that potential relationship with an agent. So
there's several of those things, you know, the website, the relationships, the videos that the speakers need. Is there anything else that you see in terms of even just the mindset? You know, because you talk to some speakers and you're like, man, this guy's got it. You know, this gal's got it. Like, they have their act together. And there's some where you talk to them and, you know, they're kind of like, speaking's kind of cute. You know, I think that'd be fun. So like, what's the difference between a speaker that makes it and a speaker that doesn't? Like, what do you see there?
Boy, that is a tough one. It is. That's one of the hardest questions that we deal with. Like, if I always knew which speakers were just going to pop, like, it's so hard. Some of it is just gut. Like, until you see the full product.
Yeah.
You know, it's hard to know if you're going to be able to make it as a speaker or not. And sometimes we miss it too. We think, oh my gosh, this guy is absolutely going to blow up. And it just doesn't. They are good enough, but for whatever reason, it just does not connect in corporate America. But, you know, speakers that come to me and say, hey, I want to be a speaker. Where do I start? That's like, well, you just don't. Like, it just happens. Like, truly, most of those relationships that I have built and they say, you know, I just did this or I posted this thing and I got asked to speak once. I didn't necessarily try to be a speaker. And then one thing led to another and one thing led to another is how most of those start. So it's kind of like, you know, these things are very valuable. You know, what we're doing here, Grant, with your audience of like, I have started to speak, right? Like I am starting to get this thing going now. Where do I go from here? And there's a lot you can learn. But sometimes it's just the market has to say, you could have all those things. You could have all those assets. You could be priced right, but it just does not take off in corporate America for whatever reason. And I wish I had an answer for that because I would sign all the perfect ones every time, but it doesn't work that way.
But there's also like so much of it, you know, as you kind of alluded to there is maybe you have the best marketing stuff, but if you're mm-hmm. dropping the ball on stage, you know, you're going to struggle and vice versa. You know, if your marketing stuff is mediocre, but you're amazing on stage, like, the importance of being amazing on stage and what it is that you do and the craft of speaking and communicating. Like we've all, every single one of us watching, listening to this, we've heard or seen speakers and you come away and you're just like, I am just speechless at how good that was. And maybe there's like some specific things I can put my finger on. And some of it is like, boy, I can't even quite quantify, but that was amazing. That was really, really impressive. And so just the importance of being really, really good on stage at what you do.
Yeah, absolutely. Working on your craft at the end of the day is probably the most important. Like it is. Like you have to have all those things, and you have to be a very good communicator. You have to have some, you know, there's something about you, that it factor. And then, you know, when you speak, there should at least be 1 to 2 people coming up to you and say, "That was fantastic. I need to have you at this event." Yeah. If you speak 10 times and you get 0 spin, something's not connecting, right? And unless there's, you spoke to 10 rooms with 0 decision makers.
Yep.
But I mean, that's definitely something that you should be seeing. Like if it goes well, because most of the time the event planner is always going to tell you, we typically are going to shy away from conflict.
Yeah.
It was awesome. And I mean, I see that on a day-to-day basis.
Yeah.
You know, the speaker will get feedback from the person on site. "Oh yeah, it was great. Thank you so much." I call them a week later, like, "It was okay."
Yeah.
You know? And so the real test of, regardless of what they say, do you get some LinkedIns? Do you get hit up with other people wanting you to speak at their event? Like that to me is the biggest telltale sign.
Yeah. Very true. Brandon, always enjoy the time together, man. If people want to find out more about Premier and kind of poke around the site there, where can we go?
PremierSpeakers.com. That's where we're at. And then your audience has always been super respectful. I am on LinkedIn. That's fine. If you want to, you know, some advice, you guys don't ever inundate me, right? But, you know, there from time to time, if we can be a helpful hand to support what you guys are doing, Grant or any of the speakers, please let us know. But we're out there.
Yeah, I'll piggyback on that. I've always said this, anytime you're on or Sean's on or anybody, if any bureau partners and friends, it's just like, hey, don't go harass them, because if you want to know the quickest way to shoot yourself in the foot, that's it. Hey, I heard you on the podcast and like you should book me. Like, nope. Game over. You go straight to jail with that. So don't do that. It's an awful, awful, awful approach. So Brandon, always appreciate the time, man. Good stuff.
Absolutely. Good to see you again, Grant. See you guys.
Hey friend, are you ready to get serious about taking your speaking business to the next level? Maybe you are someone who is looking for ways to book more paid gigs, or maybe you're trying to figure out all the different things that go into building a successful speaking business. Or perhaps you are an experienced speaker who wants to scale your speaking business to multiple 6 figures. If that's you, I'd encourage you to visit thespeakerlab.com/call. Again, thespeakerlab.com/call, and book a free, no obligation call with our team. And if you're not quite ready to take that leap, I don't want you to hesitate in checking out all the free resources that we have available to you on our website, including this podcast. So head over to thespeakerlab.com. Again, thespeakerlab.com. Find hundreds of blog posts, how-to guides, podcast episodes, email scripts, proposal templates, and so much more. Finally, I got a big favor. I would love for you to leave us a rating or review for this podcast. We read every single one, and it also helps other speakers find valuable free resources that they can use to build their own speaking careers. As always, thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.